Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Yeah.
All right, we're getting everybody in.
All right.
It is almost Thanksgiving, which is really hard to believe. So while everybody is getting in, why don't we talk about our favorite Thanksgiving food? Felix, what do you think? What's your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Everything.
Everything.
Except the turkey.
You don't like turkey?
Yeah. Usually my family makes chicken for me instead of turkey.
Okay.
Have you ever had a deep fried turkey?
No.
Like salty food?
No, I heard it's really good.
Oh.
Deep fried turkey is really good. My husband actually smokes a turkey for us for Thanksgiving, and it is the best ever. Yeah.
That's where a good gravy comes
in. So next Thanksgiving, we're coming over to your house?
Yeah. We won't be here. Tom, what about you? What's your favorite?
I love the sweet, so it's usually a combination of pumpkin and pecan pie, or pecan pie, as I was
about to say. Are you sure it's pecan? It's not pecan?
In Ohio, we call it pecan.
All right. Yeah, we have apple pie is like our go-to. I make a sour cream apple pie that is amazing. And then, gosh, I think I like everything too, but I guess I'll go a little bit outside and say I really like, there's a broccoli casserole that my aunt makes, and it's really delicious.
The only thing I'd add is crispy Brussels with a balsamic glaze on there but that's year round. And Felix, you're getting love from David Gibbs for the smoked turkey. He says it's the only way to do it.
That's right.
That's Melissa. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Smoked turkey is the best. Thanks, David. Pumpkin cheesecake. Amy, that's amazing. That sounds really, really yummy. And dressing. Yeah. In the South, we do call it dressing instead of stuffing.
Wow.
It's very
something we learn every day.
Yeah. Right. It's very interesting. But it's, you know, pecan, dressing, stuffing. I don't know. It's all the same. All right, we're going to go ahead and get us kicked off here. Thanks to everybody for joining us this Friday afternoon. We're excited to have you guys here. I'm Melissa Langdale. I'm the president and COO of the Mortgage Collaborative. And this week we have an amazing guest with us, Felix Viner of First World Mortgage. Felix, thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Rob is sorry he cannot make it today, but I am joined by Tom Gallucci, which I know is a favorite of everybody's here, and we're going to have some fun discussions today. Are you guys ready to kick it off?
Let's do it.
Felix, why don't you tell everybody, just start off with you know, what is First World Mortgage? What makes you guys unique? Give us a little bit of a rundown on your world.
We are IMB. Located in Connecticut, been in business since 1992. Grew to about 120 people at the highest time. At the highest, we probably did 650-ish million. We're doing about 400 million now, which is still respectful.
Yeah.
We do specialize in first-time home buyer programs. We are number one in our state with Chaffa. Was Bund program, so we help a lot of borrowers in our state to achieve American dream.
That's awesome. And I didn't say this, but obviously, Felix, you are the VP of Capital Markets for First World Mortgage, but your hands are in a lot more than just cap markets, right?
Yeah, a lot of hats: recruiting, operations, contracts, tech. You name it, janitor.
That's fantastic. You have been a longtime TMC member, and you know we're thankful for you and for everything that you do within our network. So thanks for joining us today. We are going to spend a little bit of time talking about what we're thankful for today too, because I think, you know, obviously this year has been challenging for a lot of mortgage companies, even the ones that are, you know, taking market share right now and really investing in their companies for growth in the coming year. There's been different challenges for them, right? And so I thought it'd be a great opportunity for us to talk a little bit about what we're thankful for in the mortgage space, even though we could probably all say we're thankful for pie and we're thankful for turkey and our families and all of those sort of things. So for everybody that's with us, put what you're thankful for in the chat. We'd love to hear from you guys as well. But let's start off with what we're thankful for in the mortgage space. Let's see, Tom, do you want to go first? What are you thankful for in the mortgage?
Yeah, and I'll just take a quick second. I mean, Melissa revealed to us earlier that Thanksgiving is her favorite holiday of all. And we honestly, as a team, spent 15 minutes on a call and just kind of deflected from the next business task we needed to tackle and spent a few minutes about what we're thankful for. And not surprisingly, it kind of got heavy pretty quick. But honestly, it was such a cathartic exercise. It leads into what I'm thankful for, which is just all the great friends and colleagues that we have in this industry who've all kind of shouldered the weight of carrying on through a tough year. And for those of us that are fortunate enough to be gainfully employed right now, and we spend so much time kind of focused on our craft that probably don't spend enough time in the ability to reflect what we're thankful for. So I love the theme for today, Melissa. Just I'm thankful for our TMC family. And I hope that those online, if you get the opportunity next week or just over the course of the remainder of the year, take a few minutes with your teams and reflect on what y'all are thankful for. It was awesome to hear from our team, too, about the different things they were thankful for. And it brings you back to the people that make this business really flourish.
Agree completely. Felix, are you thankful?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo Tom. I mean, we have jobs, doors are open, right? And I think we are blessed. We are able to help people to get their homes, especially for us. We are able to get them free grants as a down payment assistance. I mean, what can be better?
I don't know very many cap markets folks that would be really thankful for the margins that are in those bond programs.
It's but all about negotiations with your state.
Yeah. It is such a great program. And I'm you know, happy to hear you say that you're thankful for that. I will share that I'm thankful for a couple of things. I'm obviously thankful for our TMC family. Thankful to be in this role and be able to spend some time with you guys each week as a part of the rundown. I'm also thankful for this market. And I know that might sound a little bit crazy because, you know, if I think about all of the years that I've been in mortgage, you know, we've had ups and downs. There's been cycles. There always will be cycles in mortgage. But every time there's a cycle, there's this really cool things that happen where people start thinking outside the box. They start kind of pivoting and trying new things. And I think there's this really cool space for innovation when challenges happen. And so I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that this is an opportunity for us to rethink how we do things, you know, rethink workflows, rethink kind of tech stacks, rethink, you know, the things that are most impactful to our businesses and the things that are most impactful to customers that are looking for a mortgage. Because at the end of the day, this is such an incredible industry to be a part of. We get to be a part of the biggest purchase in somebody's life. And that's pretty amazing. So. All right. Well, we've got a bunch of chats and I'm going to highlight just a couple because it's fun and it's Thanksgiving. And I have to say thank you to a couple of people. Femi says he's thankful that the Fed backed off of hikes, which is great. I think we're all really thankful for that, Femi. Stacy says she's thankful for her network, which is great. Eric's thankful for great relationships, which endure both in good and tough times, which is great. Paul Campbell, Felix, he says he's thankful for you and for
love you, Paul.
Matthew says he's thankful that Austin is no longer in the seventh circle of hell temperature wise. He's not wrong, although we are at 80 degrees today. which in case anybody is a golfer, that's like literally the perfect time to be in the middle of November and be able to get out in 80 degrees. Ira, thank you. He says he's thankful for everybody at TMC and the relationships that he's made, and that everybody works so hard. Kevin says he's thankful to have the time to hone my craft and to plan for 2024. Kevin, it's actually really good to hear from you, my friend. We know each other from really far back. Wayne says he's thankful he still has clients and a job, which is great. David says he's thankful that he gets to do his job every day. And Ashley, which is one of our TMC teammates, says she's thankful for all of our lenders who help one another on the daily. They're so open and caring and genuine. So lots of things to be thankful for this time of year. And glad we got to spend some time kind of, you know, just reflecting on the things that have been meaningful to us in the past. So
I'm also thankful for the budding bromance that exists between Felix and Paul.
Yes, that's pretty amazing. Paul is one of our TMC lender board members. So, Paul, a big shout out to you for saying you're thankful and developing the little bromance you have going on with Felix. And yes, he is one of our best dressed, Amy. Absolutely. All right, so we're going to talk about mortgage here. I promise we're going to get around to some of the things that are really impactful to our marketplace. You know, Felix, I think we've had a couple of things come up really over the last couple of weeks where we've seen kind of Wells withdrawing from the equity line or their equity lines and their offering of that. We've seen some banks kind of closing down wholesale channels. You know, as Fed fund rates have stayed as high as they are for as long as they have, you know, there are some depositories out there that have liquidity challenges and are just trying to choose where they're investing in their companies, which is great. But sometimes, you know, we don't really connect the dots between the things that are happening in the banking world and the things that kind of affect the IMB world. So I thought it would be just kind of a good time to just pick your brain and see. You know, when banks have things like, you know, withdrawing from equity lines, kind of wholesale channels that are shutting down, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to the market in general? What can our, you know, our friends on the call with us today kind of learn from what's going on there?
Well, it's actually good for us, right? When big banks withdraw from our markets, right? Because there's more business for us. And plus, they don't want to get in between the fight of UWM and Rocket, right? Because nobody can compete with that from the wholesale perspective. We on in our market, we work a lot with smaller community banks. I would say up to $2 billion, where we can still sell them home equity lines. We can still sell them ARMs, jumbos, something that does not fit Fannie Freddie. You know, just outside of the box portfolio products. I've been encouraging everybody probably for the last 3 years to go to your market, talk to your community lenders, and, you know, tap their money because they are originating. We have banks in our market that they did not let anybody go from their residential departments, but they have no volume. They're just overspending in salaries, but they're just sitting quietly and waiting for the storm to pass, I guess. Hopefully they have enough money, right, to sustain the storm. But we've been really successful at tapping that market and providing people with good loans and at a lot lower rates than the market dictates.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, what you, you know, have said about kind of the depositories and them kind of holding on to folks, oftentimes they're getting creative, like IMBs are getting creative, right? They're looking at those individuals and trying to leverage them for other things. Sure. And, you know, oftentimes we see things like that happen. I think it's, you know, I like the partnership that you've kind of created with some of your kind of community banks and, in your area, right? Like it gives you the ability of offering some products that are outside the box and helps them to continue to build their portfolio and their customer base and all of those sort of things at the same time. So that's pretty awesome.
And I'm curious, Felix, when you forge those relationships, was it a challenge then from trying to kind of negotiate a structure that could work to help provide loan products out to those client bases with your team, I'm assuming, doing the production?
I would say in the beginning, we had a lot of challenges just because there was no knowledge on the other end how to receive those loans. But once we completed one or two relationships, you know, next one, it was just like riding a bike. We already know what community banks are looking for. We just recreated the process with little tweaks, and they love it because we deliver the files that they're looking for because we understand their mentality behind it, right? Because it's not just a regular Fannie Freddie, you know, use agency guidelines and close the loan. They're looking for something specific that sometimes doesn't even apply to the agencies. But you have to play the game. And in the end of the day, if they're buying loans in 4 to 7 business days with no issues. You know, not like aggregators, sometimes it takes them 2-3 weeks to do it. So especially in this market with high cost warehouse lines and, you know, rates fluctuating, sometimes you're actually in minus. We're not used to losing money on warehouse lines, right? We always used to make money on warehouse lines. So this is another challenge that we have to work with. But, you know, with right partners, we're able to overcome these.
Well, and it's such a smart concept in going to your local markets as well, because you're going to have such a better feel for the constituencies that, you know, are you're producing the loans for and the different products that can be viable. You know, like you mentioned it too, just leveraging, you know, your local bond market and trying to produce more LMI and first-time homebuyer programs.
Yeah, for sure.
Far more relationship based than maybe transactional, trying to scorch the earth.
Sure. In the beginning, yes, you do have to form those relationships. But once you do, they're super loyal, and as long as they have liquid funds to lend, you are their guy. You know, so spend the time, and in the end, it will work out.
That's great. Our friends at Maxwell, and I'll plug them a little bit because they're good TMC friends, but they just did a study on kind of the changing demographics of home buyers and those that are buying right now. And you know, I think it's that your focus on that, you know, LMI community, the ability to kind of think outside the box with either portfolio products or bond products. Their study actually kind of supports that strategy going forward for everybody as well. So y'all go check it out. It's on their website. So I won't go into all the details and steal their thunder with it, but there's a lot of research that's been backing up that strategy, obviously, as well. So, you know, I think that the other thing that's interesting right now or that I've read this week is MBA reported that IMBs lost an average of $1,000 a loan basically in the third quarter versus about $500 in the second quarter. At the same time that they reported all of this, they reported that 51% of companies are reporting a profit right now. So there is a really good, decent chunk of the market that has figured out how to be profitable in this space. You know, I'm curious, and you don't have to share what First World does, but what you're seeing from your peer groups that might be driving that profitability. What are the things that they're focusing on that the folks on this call should, you know, be focused on going into 2024?
Watch your operational cost, right? That's number one. Bring in tech, but everybody's saying bring in tech. You have to bring in tech smart that actually will benefit the company financially, not just make everything easier, but then you will have people that just sitting there doing nothing, right? So you have to repurpose your people to be able to do more tasks. Create new products. We are creating new construction in-house at this point, the construction of perm product. We have bridge loans. We have HELOCs in-house. So all that drives profitability up. Renegotiate your contracts with your vendors. That's huge. Been really lucky and happy with the partners that we have. Coverage One has been great help for us to fit our insurance needs. And that also, you know, brings it to bottom line and makes us more profitable in a whole. So we don't see, as a company, we don't see losses like what MBA is saying on average, you know, $1,000 per loan sounds high. it would be tough to sustain that, you know, at 140, we're closing 140, 150 loans a month. It would be a tough pill to swallow if you're losing that much per loan. So, but yeah, look at your operations and bring the correct tech in. I would say that would be probably my number one advice.
Okay. There's, you know, there's a lot of predictions happening right now that 2024 is going to be a little bit of a better space for the mortgage industry. And, you know, while it looks like there's, you know, 51% of these mortgage banks that were surveyed are profitable. I mean, maybe they're starting to, you know, move things in the right direction. But I'm curious, as we look at the market as a whole in 2024, what does that, you know, do you have predictions that you want to share? Which you
hold on. Let me do my, you know, crystal ball and pull out the right ticket.
Yeah, that one. The one that says, you know, gosh, I forgot all of their little sayings, but ask again later. Isn't right. that one of them?
Well, listen, last week been great for rates, right? So I'm sure everybody, especially in cap markets, loving the last 5-7 day spin. I mean, it's a tug war between different parties, right? For next year, next year's election year. So it could be huge for our industry. I can see rates go down first quarter of next year, and I'm really hoping to get 2 refi cycles in the next 18 months.
Wow.
You know, just maybe drop to low 6s and then maybe drop to mid 5s. That'll be fantastic. And we believe in it so much that we are actually gearing and prepping for it in these little slower time than normal. We are prepping for it with right technology and right people to be ready. So we don't, because we feel like we missed out on so much business during COVID when the rates went low and we just could not handle the volume. So we hope we will not do the same, make the same mistakes this time.
So 2 refi cycles in 18 months.
Right. Take that. And I mean, you're seeing some of those economic figures out there starting to support that. Saw a report yesterday in the news just that consumer holiday spending was down 1% at this point over last year, which doesn't sound like much, but when it's been constantly going up with increased prices, like, that's huge. And you're starting to see unemployment claims tick up, you know, gas is obviously down. To Felix's point, an election year is going to fuel a lot of that desire to keep prices and costs low. All the different metrics that the Fed has continually set out there are going to be on their radar as far as, you know, Fed-induced decreases in 24. And seems like there's a consensus out there that seems to think that we could expect the first one in May.
They have to do something to tell us what they're going to fix and how they're going to do it, right? So, you know, I mean, even I was reading in HouseWire this morning that home builders slashed prices to clear inventory, right? Because the rates are high, you know, and they're predicting, you know, for housing conditions to improve in the next few months. So I feel that's a positive statement for our industry. Maybe more houses will come on the market. We will see more inventory, you know, have more buyers to be able to buy homes.
Right. And from an affordability standpoint, it's starting to feel like that tide's turning too, where the continual increases are kind of leveling off right now, because you just add that with an 8% interest rate or mid sevens, it just becomes not worthwhile to somebody sitting on the sidelines right now to pull that trigger. So there'd be all these.
Or just some people, even if they want to pull the trigger, they cannot afford it.
Right.
Right. And, you know, all agencies pushing affordability, 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 affordability. But people that fit the criteria cannot afford the houses and the rates. Right. So we have to do something in order to be able to provide the volume in the right environment.
I agree. Paul actually says he agrees with you, by the way, Felix. He thinks the market's going to...
That's a bromance. Bromance.
It is. I love it. Y'all are...
Well, and your point too, like if you can get it into that mid five figure at some point, see a lot of studies out there that seem to be that sweet spot for these homeowners on the sidelines that have all this new equity that they'd love to tap into, but don't want to sell to give it right back and what they're going to pay an increased monthly payment.
Right. And they don't want to improve the properties either because the HELOCs are still at 8%, right? At the best case scenario.
That is right. Well, one of the challenges that we happen to be tackling next week, or not next week, well, almost next week, but in our 12 days of TMC is affordability and inventory. So we, for those of you that have not heard, we do a virtual conference every December at TMC. And this year we're doing something a little different where we're doing a solution sprint. And we're tackling some of the biggest industry problems. We're putting our members in teams, and we have some fun prizes and things like that to see who comes up with the best solution. But we have five big problem statements that we're tackling, and one of them is affordability, and another one is looking at it opening up inventory. And you're right, some of that might just happen due to market changes, but what if we could intentionally design some of this, right? Creating a funnel or a space or a cap market strategy. We could use you in one of those, Felix.
Yeah. It'd be like Google by accident.
To your point, Melissa, I know we're going to have the ears of the GSEs around this too. Is one of the problem statements is how we can increase day one certainty or AIM utilization without increasing the cost of origination. So I know they're eager to hear kind of the conversations and solutions that our sprint teams end up coming up with. So if you already registered for 12 days, got to talk to your member benefit or biz dev advocate about getting signed up so you can participate in the sprint. And if you're not, then you got to get registered for 12 days. Your whole company can be participating in this too.
Yeah, it's exciting. We have
That's a great event. Yep.
Well over 1,000 registrants right now. So it's gaining some good traction. So excited to That's see awesome. What we can come up with and, maybe taking some of these ideas to our friends at Fannie or Freddie as they're trying to, kind of intentionally design the next round of D1C or increasing utilization with D1C or AIM.
That's right. And we're going to give people Amazon gift cards on the winning teams just for their time. Because, we know we're asking for a bit out of you too for your creativity as well. So we ought to reward you.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, we are almost up with our time. Before we go, I thought it'd be interesting since we've spent a little time talking about kind of affordability and inventory challenges, kind of what's happening in the marketplace in 2024. Obviously a big thing that's on a lot of our lenders' minds is cost of origination. There's a lot of companies, kind of looking at everything that goes into that. And obviously if the market opens up a little bit, that cost will go down a little bit if they maintain, kind of their existing staff levels, because there is a component of capacity that's in that cost of origination. But, if I look at what are the big drivers of that, I think it's $11,000 now a loan. So if we're only making $10,000 and it costs $11,000 to do a loan, I think we just figured out the MBA's loss of $1,000 on a loan. But You know, what are the things that companies should be kind of preparing for right now, Felix, as they get into 2024? You mentioned some products earlier, you know, and kind of focusing in on that first-time homebuyer marketplace. But are there other things that they could be focusing on, particularly to drive down that cost of origination?
Like I said, right tech is very important. Everybody knows work number is through the roof, right? What are they, $58 per pull? And sometimes you have to do it twice or three times. I mean, it's super expensive. That just adds up over time. Replacing expensive tech with less expensive and better tech, right? Because I feel like some technology companies just get fat and happy on what they're getting. And they're just not looking forward too far, and they're just staying stagnant with their tech and prices. And if everybody will look at their tech portfolio, they will see that it definitely holds there that it can be fixed. And that'll be, if there is one thing I can recommend, that would be the one thing that I would go with.
I know Felix kind of stole my answer there too. I was going to say the same thing. And real quick, since you mentioned the work number, I'm going to give a shout out to Tracy King, not only because she's on the line, but she's a great partner of ours. She mentioned earlier in the year, and it's a great solution if you are still using the work number to make sure that your teams are doing their orders direct through your credit verification provider, as opposed to calling out the work number, and they're going to largely give you verification solutions on a buyer that you don't necessarily need, even drive up that cost further. But to Felix's point, it's just really reevaluating tech. A lot of times there's tech layered on top of tech, and really just reviewing operational processes to make sure that the solutions that you do have in place are driving the efficiency gains that you're seeking. Is like, you go through your entire process, there's a decent chance there's probably some duplicative components out there that may not be delivering the gains that you're seeking for the cost associated.
Yeah. Absolutely agree.
And Tracy says that you haven't lived until you've been reevaluated by Felix.
Tracy is a big partner of ours. The partners are really big partner of ours. So they're great. Highly recommend.
I love it. All right, guys, we are all up on time. Felix, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for spending some time with us, telling us what you're thankful for. I hope everybody has a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday. We will not have a rundown next Friday, but we will starting again right after. And we'll have some highlights from 12 days. In fact, our solution sprint winners that we talked about earlier are actually going to be announced at our rundown on December 15th. So you guys will be able to hear who the winners of those contests are. So happy Thanksgiving, happy Friday. Look forward to seeing you guys again when we jump back in after Thanksgiving. Have a good Friday, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.